Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we'll be talking about the feeding you might be seeing on some of your plants out in the field, as well as having our first June Dairy Month challenge. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at Corteva's new formulation of a herbicide. Egg History Minute, we'll talk the history of cheese. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events, and we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. Rain, just go away, please. Yesterday was like kind of insane how much it was just like pop-up showers and the wind, like kind of need the wind to dry stuff out, but it was cold and windy and random rain showers. Like,
it's just, you can't get anything done.
No.
You're spraying, it's been really windy spring. There's been little bits of windows where it's been dry enough and not windy, but that's been hard. And then,
I mean, there's enough corn left to go in the ground, but spraying is the big thing at this point. Like,
there's always those dagger days where if it's not predicted, really, like,
I think that, yesterday was a dagger. Like, the wind wasn't, because we knew the wind was coming yesterday.
Yeah.
But the, right.
Those little.
I thought we got through over. There was a chance overnight,
right?
Wednesday into Thursday for rain that some got and some didn't. But then it was done. But then we got to like 11, and I'm like, "Crap! I better get out of this field, or I'm going to get drenched."
Right.
Which I raced back to the truck with the four wheeler, jumped in the truck, and it just opened up.
Little spotty showers.
And then it was done, and
right, and they were quick, but they were enough to just like not dry, and then
yeah.
Guys that were trying to chop alfalfa that was cut before that, it was ready but not. And those are the days where you just like.
Right. Forecast wise, we looked like we were clear till Saturday at least, maybe even Tuesday, depending on which forecast you looked at. And then it was like, nope, guess we're not clear any day. Because even this morning, before we were recording, I got a notification on my phone like, rain possible in the next few hours. Like, no. No, don't, please.
It
just
is,
stop.
And it is starting to dry out on top. Like, we get a couple days, and then we could go again, but we don't seem to find those couple of days.
That's what this spring has been, though. It's been a day away from being ready. And I would even say the stuff that was planted, it was adequate. It was good to go. But if you would call it, like, perfectly ready, it wasn't that either. No. It was, like, always like, we're day away. And then the next day it always rained. So hopefully, you know, growers can kind of go to plan C or D here and start thinking how you're going to manage through, you know, another wet sort of spring. And what is hard is you say wet spring. I mean, we were really dry in March and early April. It just was kind of May, and that's, for a lot of us, that's our planting window in certain areas. So
yeah, no, I talked to a guy yesterday who was like, we should have just planted all our corn in April because we never got frost after that. Like,
right.
In hindsight, we could have all been planted in the month of April probably and been fine, or at least maybe not fine, but in better shape than some of us are. But there's still a lot of stuff that got in the ground, but
right,
there's enough left to go to that.
Right. There's certain areas too. That's what's odd is there's, you go to areas, even through Midwest now, you know, Iowa's caught back up and
yep.
A lot of areas have caught back up, but just locally then it's like township to township or even county to county. Maybe you'd say where there's areas that I've got that are done. And then there's areas that just didn't even really start yet.
Right.
And those are the guys that didn't start that stuff too is, they've did enough, and I don't want to say they're burned out, but you're tired out because you did a certain amount of stuff, but you haven't really started yet. It's like running a marathon or maybe an Ironman, and you did like, say, an Ironman, you got to do, I think they make you swim first, right?
Yeah, I'm not 100%
I think
sure
they do that so you don't drown. I know it's not last.
Yeah.
But
so might anyway, be run, that, swim, then bike, but yeah.
Okay, so
again,
Like they got the swim part done because they've been drowning in rain, and now you got to get on and run 26 miles and bike 100 some miles yet too, and it's like, holy man, it just feels like 2023, with all its drought problems that we did have, at least you could do stuff anytime you wanted. You could just, park it on the calendar. We're cutting hay that day, or we're going spray, and you could do it, and there wasn't this back and forth of stuff.
Yeah, 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike ride, and a marathon 26.2-mile run completed in that order, according to Google.
So yes, we are through your 2-mile swim here, that you still got to hop on a bike and go.
It's been a fun swim, too, because it's like, guess what? We're just going to keep adding water to the pool that you're swimming in.
Yeah, right.
So that shore gets further away. But yeah, on a lighter note, it is June Dairy Month now. We've had our first round of dairy breakfasts that went last weekend. Brown County's, I think, over 8,000
served. 8,000 sounded really, really good day for it. It sounded like a good, successful breakfast. So
and they lucked out because Saturday was a terrible day. It was rainy and windy, and Sunday was like a glorious day, just completely opposite. So everybody was probably like, want to get out and do something, and hey, let's go to breakfast on the farm. It was on a main road, so easy to get to. And
yeah, on Saturday, Winnebago County had their, I think it's like grilled cheese
days or something like that. Yeah.
And I know that just talking to people that were there, it was successful, but it wasn't, there's a good amount of people, but just a tougher day. It was like 10 to 2. So I think that would have been right kind of when some of that was.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it rained.
Was raining.
Probably that whole time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or darn you. I mean, it wasn't a heavy rain. That was the one bright side. But it was also kind of a downer because it's like that slow, steady. It's the ideal rain. Usually, like, everything's planted. We want a nice, slow, soaking rain. But that's kind of what it was. So it wasn't, like, heavy enough to drive you away, but it was enough to just be annoying, I think, probably.
And then you're damp and cold all day.
Right.
Walking around.
Yeah, temperature-wise, it was not warm either. But yeah, more this weekend. Outer Gamies is this weekend on Sunday at Erickson's, like we mentioned last week on the podcast. Number of other ones, I think, either Manitowoc or Sheboygan's is this weekend as well. So, we got three more weekends of
And coming up, Father's Day to the next weekend, there's two. There's Wapaka County and Kewaunee County. So, going to be a lot of opportunities now to kind of sneak away to enjoy the breakfast. Erickson's, too, it always seems... It's out of Gamey County, but it's kind of on that
northwestern
corner. But you look it up, like from Seymour, it's 30 minutes. That's not bad. No. And
They're right near where Farm Tech Days was back in the day. So, nowhere. That's the nice thing about being, if you went from eastern out of Gamey County to western, it's, I think, because we're only a few minutes from the Brown County line, you could get anywhere in pretty much half an hour, so.
I still have PTSD from Farm Tech Days, Matt.
Sorry. Didn't mean you to still bring up that trauma.
That's been
12 years. Or is it 2010, right?
I think it was 2012.
Yeah.
It was 12.
12, yeah.
So it was 12 years.
12 years.
12 that years was a in weird 2012. Spring, too, where it was just weird.
Well, that was a drought year, but then, we broke the drought with Farm Tech Days. Because we had all sorts of weather. We had evacuation due to severe weather the first day, a late start the second day from the rain.
I thought it was hot as blazes the first
day. Oh, it was really hot. But then, like 2:33 maybe, the storms rolled in. We had to evacuate everybody. Then it continued to rain the next morning.
Well, because I was on, we were at Tent City, right? We were in charge of it. And I was in charge of the walkie-talkies, and they sent us the wrong walkie-talkies. Do you guys remember any of that?
I do remember,
So there was some company out of Vegas that did shows.
Oh, that's right.
Remember that? Yeah. I found these walkie-talkies because they were... honestly, the guy was pretty good to work with, but I'm sure it was this dude in his basement. And they were supposed to have a way where you could go to some channel and it would basically override everything.
Like an all-call
type thing, yeah. And something was wrong with them, and we figured it out ahead of the show, but they couldn't ship us the new walkie-talkies till like the middle of the show. So everything got figured out, but it was, I just remember stuff like that where it's like, hey, you don't know anything about running a show. And it was years in the making, but and then you have stuff like that where there's severe weather problems or.
Well, and the real kicker was on the third day, I don't think it got above 60.
Oh,
it was cold. Because they like sold out of sweatshirts that day because everyone was like cold. And so, yeah, it was just kind of a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Year that year, too.
Parking. Remember, parking was just a.
Well, the parking guy just quit.
Yeah.
Like, that was one interesting thing.
Just remember thinking like the walkie-talkie thing. At the time, it was a big deal, and people were upset, but at least it wasn't as screwed up as parking, so nobody got, like, pissed at me. So
There was enough snafus to go around.
Yeah, that was all right.
For every...
Can we laugh? I feel like that's how you got to get through. Yeah. You just got to laugh about it, Bill.
You laugh about it now, yeah. Oh, yeah. We could have a whole episode with Kevin.
Oh, yeah. Bring on.
Yeah, that could be a whole interview.
Bring on
yeah.
Kevin Jarek and talking tech days.
We might have to invite Dr. Phil to kind of just moderate that.
Okay, Kevin, tell me about your trauma. How did farm tech days break you?
Anyway, sorry, Kevin. You guys ready to get into our topic for today and ready for your first JDM challenge?
I'm ready for both.
All right. So just kind of a quick topic from the field here was you might be seeing some feeding out there. I know we've been seeing it. I don't feel like we need to ring an alarm bell because of it, but it is... There's enough of it out there that it's noticeable, and we're getting questions, and it is making some people nervous. But so we've got slugs, armyworm, maybe cutworm out there, and cranes, the perennial corn destroyers that are the cranes out there. So I think the most atypical one is the slug feeding. We usually don't see a ton of that. I mean, I'm not saying I've never seen it before, but this year, I would say I've seen more of it than I can remember.
Seen a lot more of it, a lot more widespread, where typically we'd see slug damage on something with cover crops or no-till, yep. Where they've got kind of more habitat. I've seen it on tilled fields. I've seen it on kind of more across the board.
Right.
And then, two, is we've been sort of cooler and wetter that... The corn isn't like growing out of it very quick. Like slugs are not fast feeders like an armyworm or something else. That usually it can outgrow it and you don't even have a problem. This was like, ooh, okay, there's it. And again, I've seen where it's going to like replant because of slugs necessarily. I've heard that people are that.
Yeah, it seems there's a bigger thing south.
They
tend to have problems with that.
But it's still a concern.
It is interesting seeing them on tilled fields, though, because, Todd, you're right. Normally, they kind of harbor in the trash and kind of hang out there to stay viable and alive and when there's nothing there to hide from. But at the same point, the soil's been relatively cold and wet the last handful of weeks.
Yeah, so if you're unfamiliar with slug feeding, it's kind of... You kind of get little streaks and an occasional hole, like pockmark hole.
They kind of scarify the leaves too, a little bit.
It's very unique in that, like, the first time you see it, it's like, what is that? And then once you see it, it's very, like, oh, that's slug. What is odd, I'll be honest, is I haven't found the actual culprits all that much. Like, have you guys found the slugs a lot? I mean, I know, you know, during the day.
Years ago, I've had this year.
Right. That's previous times when I've seen this much slug damage, they're very easy to find yet. Right. Like usually in the early morning, there's still a couple slugs on the plants and stuff, and you can see them. What I thought was odd this year is like it's just harder to see that, to find them. Yeah, and Bill, have you ever done any control for slugs? There's not a lot of options.
No, I mean, there's always that rumor of like put 28 on the plants because the salt will...
28? Like even just... A little bit, yeah, so you don't like burn it too bad? Or
the salt will, like...
Or, like, urea, you're saying, or 28?
Any kind of...
Just...
Yeah, salt-based fertilizer, and it'll kind of shrivel up. That's not the right word, but basically the salt obviously takes the water out of the slug then and kills it. I've not done anything, but I haven't seen any fields that were that decimated either.
Right. Yeah, because I've heard of two, like AMS or just fertilizer. Like, you got to spin it down anyway, potentially on the corn, so you go do that. To,
I mean, they do make slug repellent or slug stuff that you can put out there. That's a big, I always see it advertised in the no-till magazines and
but
stuff.
But that's all pre, right?
I think that's all pre-treat.
Yes.
Yeah.
You got to have that
done. Not a like, post-treating
right.
type thing.
It has been hard to, because I've looked, and it's been hard to find things that are technically, you know, like a labeled thing for them when you have corn up and in the ground. So that's, yeah. There are always those fun names, to like Sluggo and Slugfest. But those are more for, you know, like people's gardens and stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be typically something you use. I wonder if the nitrogen thing, Bill, is typically it's kind of cooler and wetter, and you need the nitrogen. So it probably would hopefully set them back a little bit, and then the corn also would suck up the nitrogen
grows out a little bit
faster. Right. And
I get nervous about putting liquid nitrogen on live plants, though. I haven't been brave enough to really do
right. I wouldn't recommend that, correct? Where you'd burn the plant
right.
just as much as you would the slug. Right. Well, what did you really accomplish then?
So, yeah, the other type of feeding you might have seen is either plants like with real jagged leaf edges, or maybe even a plant, if they're small, tipped over. Sometimes they'll feed on this like the base of the stalk and tip, and that's usually armyworm or maybe cutworm. I know UW's got a new like scouting text thing where they try to warn you of flights for moths or different things and when to kind of scout for things. And so they put out a cutworm alert a few weeks ago to scout for that toward the end of May, early June here. And I for sure, yeah, haven't seen any cutworm to know for sure, but I have seen armyworm. They typically come and the moths lay their eggs in green, so they can be in ditches, they can be in cover crop fields, they can be in hay fields. There's all sorts of places they can hatch from and move out into. I know Bill, the farm you and I have talked about, has got a little bit of feeding in some of their rye fields. There's wheat fields are in other places you can find them, and I'm trying to think of the last time. It's probably been 3-4 years since I've seen them of any amount in wheat. The thing with bugs is they can be cyclical. You get bad years, low years. But they're out there, and we see them every year. It's just the severity of the feeding and stuff that you have to worry about. And I don't know if you...
What blows me away with these, Matt, is we... You know, Bill and I have traps up for these. The trap counts are pretty, I wouldn't say high, but they're there. And
I got my trap for cutworms has been low, but my trap for armyworms has been the highest. I just have that up now, Todd.
Oh, you're the highest in like.
I'm the highest in the state. Yeah.
Woohoo. You did it.
Yeah. The only one close is one in Fond du Lac County. Otherwise, everybody else's traps are half or zero. Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe we...
So, like, you and Doug are winning.
No. His is Oakfield. Okay. This is Johnsburg, unless Doug's in Johnsburg.
No, I think it's the other one.
Yeah, his are pretty much zero. But mine are... And they say that the trap counts we do for Dadcap, you can't, like, take the number of counts you get in the trap and then, correlate to that. You got to follow a trend. And a month ago, mine went from 87 moths to the next week it was 140. And now it's slowly kind of come down, but even when I counted on Tuesday,
that's
it was
a lot
still
of moths
84.
In there to count.
It is.
Like the highest I was up to is 20.
Yeah, it was kind of gross too. But
right.
But anyhow, it's coming down now, but I am seeing like last week, Sunday, I got a text from a farmer who was out with his kids in his cover crop. It was corn, and then we killed the cover, and they found them. So it like kind of correlated to exactly...
When
like,
the flight,
like,
sure.
Like the
when
the
traps hatch
went
would
up,
have been
and then all of a sudden, now they're coming back down, and boom, there's the worms.
Yeah. I saw a black cutworm bad like 4 weeks ago. I wouldn't even say bad. I just found some on a field that it made sense to have, and then it was like I found a bunch, and then by the next week they were literally like gone. And it seemed like they drowned, but I don't know that that's a thing even.
Sure.
So, but it does seem like the amount of moisture we've been getting has been sort of like the slugs are more of a problem, and it's been keeping the armyworm and the cutworm at bay a little bit. So I just, like you say, Bill, they're there. I'm not saying that they're not. It just doesn't seem like they're a problem or anything. But it's something we're going to have to watch, especially as hopefully we get drier weather here so we can do some other things. But, you know, then they might, like you say, when those moths lay their eggs and stuff, the hatch is going to be more now than it is a couple weeks ago, too.
then, so armyworm, slugs, cranes, that's something we see kind of every year. To a certain extent on certain fields, I'm sure everyone knows what a crane looks like. But their damage, what they do, is usually limited to smaller plants. And they'll actually pull the corn plant right out of the ground because they're after the actual seed. So the seed is on the roots. They'll eat that off, and then you find these nice dead husks of plants laid. And they're very, very kind. They're kind enough to go right down the row. And so it's usually like a whole bunch in a row like that. And if you're there soon enough after they do it, you'll actually see kind of a round hole where they pulled the corn plant out of the ground with their beak. And so they can be sometimes confused with the armyworm cutworm thing because armyworms and cutworms cut the plants off.
I could see, right.
And
but a lot of times you'll see the roots yet with cranes.
Right. It all depends, how soon you get there, because sometimes if they do just randomly eat one or two plants and you just see the husk laying there, and it's been a week or more, like you may not see the roots and see that. But like I said, usually if they're in there, they go right down the row, and they could do some real damage too.
No, they're kind of dicks about it, like you say, where it's like just kind of devastating area. Armyworm tend to be more sporadic, but cutworm. In cranes, you'll get like us and it'll be, 10 foot long where you don't have any plants down a couple rows. Well, that's
the hardest part of the decision, right?
Right. You can't really replant that, but you're not going to make up that yield.
You know what you should do is the holes they leave, we should go back with a seed and pop it back in.
Just throw it back in there.
Just teach the cranes to put one back.
Yeah, there you go.
Except for just eat all the seeds anyway.
We'll just feed them one on the corner then. I don't know. Yeah. I just, cranes are frustrating because they
should.
What's the legality of a bait pile?
I was just going to say that. Can we put a bait pile at the edge of the field and they can just like go nuts? That. Like, take these, leave ours alone. You can have this.
You're going to put that by the neighbor's field?
Just put like an ice cream.
Then when they're
bucket.
Done with their bait pile, they go to the.
Well, that's where, because really the only way to treat it is treat the seed with Avapel.
Right.
So then they still eat some, but it kind of makes them not taste good, and then they stop eating. So maybe do you treat the bait leave the bait the top of the bait pile like regular corn, but then when they get down in there, like have some with Avapel, so that they're like, this stuff's not good. Let's get out of here. Or maybe just treat the whole bait pile with it. I don't know, but yeah, they can be a real nuisance, and I would say most of the time it's not terrible unless you're near a water body. It seems they really go to town there, and I've seen them take like 5 or more acres out.
Yes,
if it's untreated seed, like just go crazy on it. So
I will say, like, it seems to me like certain fields are targets. Like we always, like, it's always the same fields. Like, okay, remember when we go back to corn on this set of fields, we got to talk about Avapel.
We want Avapel, right? I would say they don't come without like a warning. It's the first year, usually it's just that mating pair, it's just two out there. They do enough damage, but not bad. It's then all of a sudden, when they drop a baby, I've heard, I don't know if this is true, but that baby tends to come back to that same field or area. So all of a sudden, it's when they kind of flock up and you're getting a whole bunch of them, that's when it's a problem. So and people have tried the boom cannon kind of things, and I don't know, that seems to kind of work, and then not.
You just get used to it.
Right.
They just seem to adapt to it.
And then I've seen guys really, like, take a seed sign and you put, like, a plastic bag over it, kind of like a scarecrow type of deal.
Yep.
And those kind of work, but not great. Like, all this stuff is just, you know, can help maybe make it not as bad a certain year or right. do something that, okay, I'm going to do these for this year because I can't go retreat with Avapel once it planted. But, yeah, it's just something.
Yeah. Yeah. No, cranes are definitely a preventative thing. So, really, out of all this, the ones you can treat afterward are the armyworm or cutworm. There's potential to spray if it gets that bad. But timing's important there, too. They're usually more active real early, like sunrise, sunset, and overnight. They're not as active during the day unless you have... The only time I've seen them really active during the day is when you get a lot of residue that they can hide under. And Todd, I don't know if you remember that field that we got to look at a few years ago where they were just like in the shade under some really heavy cut rye, and then they'd come out and like eat the plant down to the ground, and they'd go back in the shade. And so even if you do spray, like spraying in the middle of the day maybe isn't best because you're not going to get direct contact with them. Hopefully there'll be enough residual to affect them, but they can be kind of tricky to manage that way. So there you go. Like I said, we haven't seen a lot of feeding that's warranting any type of treatment or that much concern, but it's something we'll keep an eye on and always good to be aware of that's out there. But now, as we're 7 days into June Dairy Month, got JDM Challenge numero uno. So ahead of you have a lovely cheese plate that I've put together for you. There are 6 different cheeses.
One of them might not be cheese.
Two of them. So all of them. All I'm going to give you.
Matt's challenges are always unique.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like half. These are like more like dares. They're like. Remember he fed us that. Oh, it was like ice cream from.
Yeah, no, it was different ice creams.
I mean, he's eating them too. So
yeah, right. Right. No, yeah. No,
it's not like he's risk of poisoning us. It's more of like.
I'm more the fool for eating the things that I'm serving you.
Because you know what you're giving.
Yeah,
we know just, what, we have what no, I'm in for. We're in the dark here. We just go with it.
So there's 6 cheeses. 1 and 2 are cheddars. 3 and 4 are soft cheeses. And 5 and 6, I'm categorizing fake cheese. And we'll talk more about why that is when we're done.
I thought we were going to have to guess. Like,
I do want you to... So,
I'm definitely not a soft cheese guy, so I'm going to blow it on 3 and 4. I'm just going to say that right now.
So
soft cheeses are like their own weird category, aren't they? Like, they're just...
Yeah, I mean, there's not a ton of different ones out there. There are a few. And yeah, without going into a lot of detail, I have a particular favorite soft cheese that I'm a fan of.
Is it on this plate?
It is.
Okay.
But yeah, so we'll just kind of go from there. So we'll try the hard cheeses first, soft cheese, and then the fake cheese.
Fake news.
Yeah. So number one is our first hard cheese.
They're both white cheddars, man. I thought that was unique. Usually you do like the white cheddar is, I do like white cheddar.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, everybody tried one. Now go ahead and try 2.
One's kind of, I wouldn't say bitter, but it's a little bit of, has a little kick. Bill's got to do a Mountain Dew chaser after it.
I do. It's like a cleanse the palate.
There you go.
Bill, I really would be proud.
Yeah. Is Diet Mountain Dew a good cheese cleansing palate drink?
So, preferences between the cheddars?
Number 2 is better.
Yep. 2 is better.
Yeah. Yep.
It's just less.
One seems more sharper. Cheddar.
Yeah, one's almost so sharp it's like bitter. Yeah.
Okay.
Do we have to wait till the end, or are you going to?
We can do by category here, so.
Are all these from like a local grocery store or a?
They are actually all from local grocery store. Okay. These cheddars, What do you think the difference is? What, just the sharpness, or what's your guess as far as the difference?
One's goat cheddar and one is regular milk. Okay. One is cow milk.
Which one do you think is goat cheddar?
One.
Okay.
That's my guess.
What's your guess?
I don't know if you can even make goat cheddar.
I don't even know. I'm going to agree with Todd. We're probably both wrong.
No, you're actually right. Yeah, whoa, number one is goat cheddar. So they do have it's a LeClaire Creamery. They have two different kinds, actually, of cheddar.
Not knowing that, it's because when you know it going in, you always get that feet taste a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But when you didn't know, it was like, wasn't as feety.
Goat feet.
Goat feet tasting.
Wasn't as goat feet
But tasting. No, some goat cheeses are surprisingly good. Does that one have a little bit of cow's milk with it, do you know? Or is it goat's milk?
I don't believe so. I don't have the label in front of me, so I guess I can't. I took a picture of all the different ones. And yeah, I can't see on the packaging. I'll have to double check. It says goat milk cheese on the package.
Yeah,
so okay. I'm guessing it's all goat milk, but I'm not going to swear to it. And yeah, the second one is a Sartori European style white cheddar.
It was good. It was real creamy. And
did Mason Crosby recommend that?
See, he was Sartori.
Was he Sartori? Okay. Yeah. No, I just kind of checked that out and thought it'd be a good comparison of white cheddars. So and I thought the European style. I wasn't sure how it was going to taste, but I thought maybe. Might have a little different taste, so it would be maybe trickier to pick up the difference. But yeah, the goat cheddar actually was better than I expected.
So, right. Yeah. Especially not, again, that's maybe what you could do, blind taste test. Just on your next cheese tray, throw some goat cheese in there and don't tell nobody. And
there you go.
See if they can even tell the difference.
All right. Next we'll go soft cheeses, so 3 and 4. So feel free to try 3.
3 just seems like cream cheese to me, like a.
Yeah, it's very, very soft.
Like it looks like cream cheese, it's more bitter.
So
than
agreed. We will have a picture of all the cheeses, on the Facebook page, so you guys can see what we tasted. But yeah, it's very creamy cheese.
It's almost spreadable. Probably could spread it.
All right, and then 4.
Or is like gooey, you can't even like touch it. Like it's like a matzo ball.
Not much taste there.
Yeah, it's not super flavorful, but it's...
Just the right amount, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a young cheese.
Do you think Matt stayed with the goat and non-goat on these or not, Bill?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I'm not the soft cheese guy, so I don't even know where to start.
Because the number 3, they make like a goat cheese now that's like spreadable, like cream cheese, and then they'll flavor them, and they're pretty good. Like on a bagel, they're good. And then the second one, yeah, just tastes like mozzarella to me, like a real, like Crave's got those like mozzarella balls or that you'd chuck on, you know, with a tomato and basil or whatever, and they're... It's really good.
Some people put them in salads too.
Salads, yep.
So what's the guess then?
I don't know many. There's brie is one of the, like, that's a soft cheese. Ricotta. Man, a lot of these. Otherwise, I'm pretty not up on my. So my guess is going to be a mozzarella and a brie because last time I had brie, yeah. It was.
Sure.
Bill isn't even a guess.
No, I don't even know where to go here.
Yeah. Not even gonna guess. No guess.
Okay. No.
Should have stuck with your instincts, Todd. So 3 is goat cheese. So another LeClaire soft goat cheese. My wife actually likes to. She had some appetizer somewhere. It's like a fried goat cheese ball that she likes. So she actually tends to have this on hand every now and again. So it's a LeClaire's soft goat cheese, and then the second one is fresh mozzarella from Belgioso.
Ooh.
So. Now we get into
I'm surprised the goat non-goat thing's getting me mad because I even thought I'm like Matt's definitely going to go goat, non-goat, and it wasn't as goaty as I thought. So,
so yeah, no.
But he would do that, like, okay, first two, yep, we did the goat, non-goat. And then you wouldn't think he'd do it twice, but yep, Matt's going to do it twice.
Always got to keep you on your toes.
We got to rebrand the goat cheat, like just not put goat on there or a picture of a goat.
Just keep calling it cheese.
Just call it, yes, because I think it's getting a bad rap apparently because it's not, it wasn't as, yeah, like I said, if you know it and then your brain tricks you into thinking that. I don't know how you say this, but they're, it's C-H-E-V-R-E, like chevre, is another word, like it's the French word, I think, for goat cheese. And I've seen that on stuff.
Okay.
Where it's like, oh, it's just fancy cheese.
Ooh, it's French cheese.
Yes, yeah. But it's goat cheese. Anyway, yes, good call on the goat, non-goat, man.
Yep, goat, non-goat. So now you guys ready for the fake cheese category?
Do you have to guess which one's faker than the other?
I'm just wondering how fake he went here. Like, is this some good sort of like... So when you say fake cheese, this is like what you think of like from... Especially number six is like the... You know, the American sort
craft
of...
Craft single,
yeah. I mean, even has like the wrapper... Matt took the wrapper off, but...
Yeah, it has the wrapper marks. Yeah, you can't get that wrapper. Off
the, it has the sheen.
Yes.
I thought about like trying to just tear little pieces to maybe hide it better, but I'm like, eh. It's fairly iconic, I think, that you guys would pick up on.
What always gets me with the... Do like the craft kind's good, but you get to like... Remember the old like school kind of this kind of cheese, or is just... It's just gross. You know, like, at least the craft kind is...
Is it your go-to for grilled cheese? Or do you go...
I actually prefer real, like, cheese cheddar. In my... real cheese. So that's why I call this the fake cheese category. This is what I always... and it comes from my father. Like, the craft singles we always called as when I was a kid.
Fake cheese.
Yeah.
I mean, it has milk and everything else in it. It's just not, you know... The same as real cheese. So I prefer like a block cheddar, mozzarella, or something else in a...
provolone is good, too.
Or provolone, yep. In my grilled cheeses. Not that I haven't eaten ones with the Kraft singles, but it's not my favorite. I do, for whatever reason, like if I make a breakfast sandwich at home, I'll put the Kraft single on top.
Sure.
Because it tends to melt.
That melts a little better, yep. Yeah.
That's the one downside with block cheeses sometimes is you don't get the melting that you want unless you're doing like a grilled cheese and you got it in the pan for a while.
By then you might char, I like a really dark grilled cheese, so yep. I get good meltiness, but if you don't like that almost black outside, you're right.
So what's the guess on number five?
I don't have any guesses, and weirdly...
It's not very good.
I weirdly kind of like it. Like, it's a weird taste. I don't know what it is.
You're weird, Todd.
It tastes like a Cheez-It if you made it into a cheese, like
without the cracker cheese part. Cheese-It.
Yeah.
It does.
So I don't know what they... Yeah, that one has me completely fooled.
Description makes sense, and I can imagine that's probably was the thought process in the development of that cheese. So five is the only non-dairy cheese on this plate.
It tastes like a cracker.
It's a vegan cheese.
Yep. Okay.
So it's got I did bring the package with me. Bill, can you grab it out of the bag there? That one has a lot of different, I think, ingredients in it, like soy and a bunch of other stuff. It was... trying to see the name here on the picture I took.
Biolife,
that's it, yes. So mature cheddar slices. Or no, it doesn't have soy. It's free from dairy, soy, gluten, lactose, nuts, and preservatives.
What are we eating?
So coconut oil, and B12 is what you're eating. filtered water, coconut oil, food starch, modified potato and corn. So it has corn in it at least.
Okay.
sea salt, mature cheddar flavor from vegan sources.
So how do they get
so
that?
Cheez-Its? I
don't know. Right? No, it
Cheez-It powder.
Yes, Cheez-It powder.
olive extract, beta carotene for color, and vitamin B12. comes from New Jersey. I saw it. I was like, yeah, give it a shot.
This is my new favorite thing, is listing what's not in something right away and the big letters in front. And then when you read what isn't, and you go like, I almost want the stuff on the that's not in it. You know, like, it's just a weird, now how much branding is, you know, dairy free, whatever, whatever.
Yeah, and, no, it's kind of like,
and the, it's, and it's
even the GMO.
It actually blows me away thing. That like, they like, it says cheese right on the package. Like,
yeah, that
it's does, not cheese.
Well, no, does that say cheese or not?
Yeah, right there.
Really?
Cheese. Yep, cheese alternative.
Okay,
alternative
reclosable pack.
See, but that's that'll be interesting. Like, if they make them change with the milk thing, they'll probably still be able to say milk alternative.
Right.
Wow. Yeah.
Coconut cheese milk alternative.
Yeah.
Like that.
It was packaged in a protective atmosphere.
What does that mean?
I'm guessing it's for allergen stuff like
that. Oh, sure.
Once open, consume within 7 days.
Okay, question. Okay. Do you remember how much that costed? I'd be curious.
Yeah. No, it was like $6-7
for that.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
For like 10 slices there, Todd. 60 cents a slice.
I was going to do, because they have like a gluten-free, I think it was vegan, to cream cheese. But that was like almost $10 for like a little thing. I'm like, nah, it's too much. I'll go with the still overpriced but less expensive VioLife vegan cheese.
And the burger they got on the front here looks appetizing. It's probably...
How can you advertise that with a burger?
Yeah.
That's not vegan at all.
No.
Yeah, it's only vegan with my cheeses. Yeah,
it's probably a soy burger.
Yeah, could be a Beyond.
It's a vegan burger of some kind, I'm sure. But yeah,
so but yeah, no, I thought we'd kick things off with some cheese, and yeah, so I'm not going to say I'm a huge goat cheese fan. I like feta. It probably is the, and that I also avoided that one because that one's generally obvious.
Yeah.
Very crumbly.
Yes, yeah,
because I thought about doing that, and I'm like, that's pretty obvious one, so I went with the soft cheese and the cheddar. But, you know, I don't mind goat cheese as much, and I was surprised at the cheddar. It really was better than I expected it to be. Because, no, like you said, the feet taste
really good. No, and I didn't, the goat thing was more of a, like, a thinking, like, what would Matt try to do to us here?
Right.
Then really knowing,
you know, it was Matt better than anybody.
Right. Right. It was like,
then yeah, going off taste.
And even the site, you threw me on 3 and 4 because I'm like, you know,
what
he would change.
What would Matt do to us? That's yeah. That's like the story of your life, Todd. What would Matt do to me?
WWMDT.
And if you know Matt, you know that's true.
Yeah. No, that's great.
It's fair. It's fair.
What is number 6? Just the craft single?
6 is just,
okay.
Traditional craft single.
No, I wasn't sure if it was a different single.
I could have gone off-brand, like, or the store brand
version like of the craft, regular.
But no, I'm a purist with my fake cheese.
So, you got it,
So we got to guess, Todd, though, is 3 or 4 his favorite? Because he said this.
Oh, I think 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm a fan of fresh mozzarella.
Yeah. Do you do that on, like, burgers or, like,
pizza? More, really? Yeah, I'll put,
like you're pizza. Getting a Jack's frozen and throwing, like, cheese that costs more than the pizza on top.
The Aldi's brand has one of those where it's got, like, globs of mozzarella on it. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I think they sell a couple different ones that have, like, the frozen, isn't as good. I prefer the fresh. I'll eat it just as is, too. Like, I'll eat just the slices.
Is Belgioso your favorite brand of fresh or...
It just seems to be the most common one I find. But no, yeah, I'm not that particular. This packaging was another thing my wife bought for something she was making, where it's like the pre-sliced log of fresh mozzarella.
Oh, it's even sliced.
Versus, like, I think when you get the ball or like the little balls, the taste is, it does seem to change when it's, the less it's managed, the better the taste seems to be. But yeah, no, the fresh mozzarella is one way.
One thing I like is there's like Crave Brothers has like a ball in plastic, and then they've got like, it's just like plastic wrap, and then they got ones like in like the container. Like, there's all kinds of different ways to get it. I think that's fun. Yeah, like a log or a ball or a, yeah, they're in, it's, that is a good, under, if you think about mozzarella too, it'd be like, remember back in the day, Matt, when we brewed beer, and you'd think like light beer would be extremely easy to brew, like because it's just
light.
Well, that was actually the hardest thing because any impurity in the brew isn't being masked by the hops taste or the other.
Right, there's nothing to hide it.
Right, yeah. And I feel like mozzarella is that version of. It's got to be done so well because if there was any, there's no other, you know, that heavier sort of cheddar, the rennet. I don't know how they do that, but
yeah.
There's no other sort of taste to kind of cover up that impurity to it or something. So yeah, sure. It's good.
Yeah, and actually, I'll put it on this last weekend. We made homemade pizza, and so I'll put some fresh mozzarella and some regular cheese on too. But yeah, overall, like I said, we'll put a picture out of the cheeses we tried. But yeah, 5 out of 6 have dairy in them. The last one was just kind of I did have some curiosity what vegan cheese tastes like, and now I know. And it is slightly like a Cheez-It, but I think I'd still take a Cheez-It over it.
Yes. Yeah.
So there you go. There's our first June Dairy Month challenge. I think, Todd, are you up next?
I'm up next. Yeah.
So we'll see what you bring us next week. Now let's go into our spotlight for today. So Corteva has unveiled a new corn herbicide, or really a new formulation, and it's Resicor Rev.
Oh, boy.
So farmers now have...
Oh, boy. I got PTSD, man. Again, that's 2 in right. One episode here.
Yep. So the... last year they debuted XL, so I'm assuming this is a replacement for that. And so it contains 3 herbicide modes of action. It's got acetachlor, which is group 15, mesotrione, which is group 27, and clopyrrolid, which is group 4. So same...
It's the same...
Modes of action as Resicor, but the new formulation builds by improving tank mix capability. Compatibility, which was the problem with XL last year.
We need a bell. Ding, ding.
And increased crop safety, as well as application flexibility on corn greater than 24 inches tall.
Ooh.
So now you can...
I swear XL, you could go tall like that, right?
Yeah, but I don't think it's that tall.
Yeah, that's tall.
Yeah. And so...
you're going to blend it with atrazine probably and...
Yeah, you'll have other things in there.
Or whatever, you know, that you wouldn't maybe go that tall.
But. If you're doing a burn down, have glyphosate or whatever in there. But, yeah, it's supposed to control up to or more than 75 broadleaf and grass weeds, according to Corteva. So Resicor Rev is offering 8 weeks of residual activity and provides control of the toughest broadleaf and grass weeds, including water hemp, Palmer amaranth, mare's tail, and giant ragweed, according to Nick Burke. From Corteva US. It's new but not new. We've used Resicor before. They've just kind of tweaked the formula a little bit here to give us some more flexibility in using it. So will be available to growers in 2025. So if you're looking to up your Resicor game, there'll be some opportunity next planting season. Now we'll go into our Ag History Minute. So today we're going to talk history of cheese since we had our JDM Cheese Challenge. So the actual time and place of the origin of cheese and cheese making is not known for sure. Practice is closely related to the domestication of milk producing animals, primarily sheep, which began around 8,000 to 10,000 years ago. Art of cheese making is referred to in ancient Greek mythology, and evidence of cheese and cheese making has been found on Egyptian tomb murals dating back over 4,000 years. Cheese may have been discovered by accident, by the practice of storing milk in containers made from the stomachs of animals. Rennet, an enzyme found in the stomach of ruminant animals, will cause milk to coagulate, separating into curds and whey. Despite the fact that we don't know for sure when cheese making started, we do know by the time of the Roman Empire, cheese making had become widespread and was highly valued practice through Europe and the Middle East. By the time of Julius Caesar, literally hundreds of varieties of cheeses were being produced and traded across the mighty Roman Empire and beyond. Many of the popular cheeses we eat today, such as cheddar, Swiss, Parmesan, and Gouda, are relatively new to the cheese story, appearing within the last 500 years. And its early history was never a worldwide phenomenon. Cheesemaking flourished in Europe and the Middle East. North and South America were completely void of cheese and the art of cheesemaking until much later when it was introduced by European immigrants. Cheese has been produced in America since the early 17th century, when English Puritan dairy farmers brought the knowledge of dairy farming and cheesemaking with them from the Old World to the new English colonies. And after the introduction, the manufacture of cheese in America moved from east to west, mostly in the northern part of the nation. So while we can't tell you exactly when it started, we do know it's an old practice that continues today. There's hundreds, if not thousands, of kinds of cheese out there. I know production in our area, there's can hardly throw a stone without hitting a cheese plant around our neck of the woods here, so lots to be done throughout the state of Wisconsin. We are a big part of the cheese production for the U.S., and I think Europe is still pretty heavy in the cheesemaking industry, too. So,
it is still neat that Wisconsin can hang its hat on that part of, you know, yes, we're not the top dairy state, but cheese-wise, we're still number one.
We're number one.
Thank you, Matt, and thank you to our listeners out there. If you'd like to see pictures of today's JDM challenge, it's really easy. All you need to do is follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio. Are you going to put them on both, Matt, or is this going to be a Facebook exclusive or the X?
I will put them on both.
You don't have to. I was more asking.
For sure, Facebook.
All right. So, yeah, see the pic there of the different cheeses, and then you know what we're eating. So you can also subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. All they need to do is search Tilt Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts or an Android, download an app like Podcast Addict, and you can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthegg.com/podcast.
Sorry, I was finishing my cheese. Thanks, Todd.
Which cheese were you down in? The mozzarella?
Nope, the cheddar. Well, I already ate them.
Oh, I thought maybe you were saving that for last. Right
away. Yeah, no, I ate that first. But anyway, now it's time for Cool Beans, That's Corny, and some current events. So, Cool Beans?
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans today. New corn rootworm biological receives EPA approval. So, Meristem has officially announced GuardX, an EPA-approved bioinsecticide that protects against corn rootworm. So it's fully integrated planter box system to provide a new mode of action for farmers to overcome corn rootworm resistance, guard those roots, and do it in a convenient, cost-effective way. According to Mitch Eviston, Meristem founder and CEO, GuardX uses naturally occurring pink pigmented facultative methylotrophs.
Good work on that.
PPFMs. To trigger the crop's genes to produce natural defense root exudates that cause the pest to retreat. If it does cause damage to the plant, biological activity can also aid in root regrowth. According to Meristem, this product will combat the increase of corn rootworm resistance and insect pressure that has occurred in recent years. They also added that the product will provide an alternative for growers looking for options outside of traditional insecticide chemicals that are used on the planter. So just another weapon in the war against rootworm that is going to be out there. So
it's kind of cool that, like we said, the biologicals are coming, and some of these things we weren't exactly, you know.
Right, this one's garnered towards defense, not like providing some sort of nutrient,
right,
better nutrient uptake or improving the plant.
Right. Yeah. So we're getting kind of more categories of these every year, which is really neat.
All right. Our That's Corny this week. The pork industry is focused on H5N1 prevention. So we know it's been an issue in the dairy side, but pork industry is focusing on prevention as H5N1 outbreaks continue. Swine Health Information Center Associate Dr. Lisa Becton says the influenza is a concern, just trying to understand the situation that's going on in dairy and then also understanding what they can do from the swine side to help prevent issues and also keep an eye on those herds. So things like making sure you have adequate bird proofing, keeping birds off the farm as much as you can, whether it's roosting areas, covering inlets where birds might come in, or even just replacing bird wires. Feed and feed sources should be covered, and pig behavior should be monitored. So it was bad enough when the cost of eggs and chicken was affected by it, but now, you know, it's spreading across ag, and we hope it doesn't become too much of a bigger issue, but it's always good to be keeping an eye on those types of things. And now we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. So an Iowa family has turned their small dairy herd into a beloved multi-brand or multi-product brand. When the four Hansen brothers came back to the small dairy farm in Hudson, Iowa, which operated since 1864, things needed to expand. So in 2004, the family built its on-site creamery to create a branded line of non-homogenized milk. A year later, they expanded the brand to include ice cream, and the business just keeps expanding, becoming one of the area's best-known local brands. So according to Jordan Hansen, they're blessed with that they have 150 milking cows that are supporting five owner families and about 60 total employees. They had not made the decision 20 years ago to start processing their own products. It would have been quite different. They put themselves on the map. Most people in northeastern Iowa don't need a map to find the seven-generation farm. They've been there for Hansen's AgriTours, tours were the family's first side hustle starting back in 2002. When Jordan's husband Blake decided to mix a few kangaroos with the usual farm animals, visitors started lining up, so added some non-traditional ag animals to the...
Doesn't their logo is a kangaroo drinking milk? I was like, why?
There you go.
That's why.
Yep. So last year, the farm hosted nearly 9,000 guests. Today, the farm's closed herd of purebred Holsteins, each one with a name, drives a multi-level business. A few years ago, they added Wagyu Holstein beef cows, which are born and raised on the farm. Product lineup includes fillets, New York strips, ribeye, sirloin, ground beef, and summer sausage, as well as beef sticks and jerky. They've been pushing the buying local movement in their area. Both are stores. They sell a lot of products made by other local producers as well as their own. So proving that necessity is the mother of invention, the Hansen family's inventive side hustles have turned a small family farm into a successful, diversified business that's well-positioned for the next generation to inherit someday. So it's kind of cool. You know, you mentioned Craves before, Todd, that, you know, they did a similar thing in vertically integrating production onto their farm and with the cheese production side of things. And so in some cases, when you have that many siblings, you've got to grow in some way. And they chose, rather than going large amount of cows on that path, to just producing a number of products and tours. And I would say for that, the number of cattle they're dealing with, that is a surprisingly low number to have that many people involved. Because they said that 60 employees, I don't know if that counts all the family members, but that's for only 150 cows, it's a lot of people with the different side hustles. So cool for them and cool for ag. So that'll do it for today. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So today we talked a little bit about feeding you might be seeing out in the fields and what that could be coming from, whether it's slugs, armyworm, cutworm, or cranes. Our JDM challenge, we did some cheese taste testing. In the spotlight, we talked about the new formulation of Resicor coming from Corteva. Egg History Minute, we talked the history of cheese. Cool Beans this week is a new rootworm biological that could help defend against rootworm damage. That's Corny, is the pork industry has to focus on H5N1 prevention. And our Field Good Friday was a successful Iowa farm turning their dairy herd into a larger business. So thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.